Welcome to Craft Advice, a podcast to help investors tackle the more complex area of their personal and business finances. Join Jack and Sean as we discuss everything from investing to retirement and everything in between.
Good. Feeling good. Look good, feel good, play good, baby. The Knoll way. The Knoll way.
Yeah, well, the real question is, how much AMC have you been buying? Market's been moving nuts.
Not enough. But I told you about that one Reddit post I was reading from the other day.
Everybody knows.
Oh my Lord.
Let's dive right into that.
Yeah, let's say that is something to not do. Let's just get at that out of the way.
No, tell the people, Sean.
All right, so to those out there, Wall Street bet. So I'm in there just because I like to stay up to speed with what the apes are doing. I think it's interesting. A lot of times it's very comical. And so I monitor things, and some poster comes across and says, you know, hey, I just YOLO'd and took a 30K loan. This money's really important. He goes into this whole explanation. He's like, I'm going to buy, Best Buy on Monday. I think it was like midday is when he got the loan, when it already popped. And so he's buying after the pop on like Monday or Tuesday is when he gets the money. Or actually, I think it was like Monday is when the money hit. The pop already happened. Anyway, so he buys basically at the top on Monday is the point of the story. Puts in some stops, gets stopped out, has a very short window where he has to pay this money. Is not able to make his money back fast enough because by the time he got stopped out, the market had recovered. And the guy ended up losing, several thousands of dollars and being put in a very tricky situation financially and was basically like, don't do this. It's like, it was the most insane, like live action car crash that I was witnessing in a while.
So while you're talking about this, Ben's up 22% right now. So.
I know, but he's not in it. That's the worst part about it. It's like the guy, and he complains like I couldn't diamond hand it, man, because I had to play the money back so fast. And I was like, oh God.
Ben Bath so is up 170% a month.
It's nuts. He had the absolute worst timing you could imagine. He was in it from the top of the market on Monday to the bottom on like Wednesday or something.
Now it's fucking
crazy. Oh my God.
There's a lot of dead bodies in that Wall Street journal.
Oh my Lord. Some of these guys are just insane. It's just wild to watch it, man. That is a pure, that's like almost like a gambler's like, I mean, it's wild, man.
Yep.
Anyways, note to the audience, the big point of that story, not to laugh at that gentleman or individual's misfortune, because that's not what I mean. It's unfortunate that that happened to them. Hopefully they make it out alive. But anyways, don't do that. Don't borrow money, especially don't borrow money that you have a short window that you have to be in and out in a super quick time period. Don't borrow money to try to play and time the stock market. Especially on earnings news or momentum swings or just, I mean, it just, it's not, if even if you win it and you get it right a couple times, 99 times out of 100, you end up continuing to play because then it turns into a gambling thing more than an investing trading thing. You lose discipline, you get greedy, and then you end up losing it all and potentially more. So definitely not advisable. Moving on.
Anyways,
safety tip of the day.
Welcome back, everybody, to Craft Advice. Woo. Jack and Sean, sorry. We don't really have a fixed schedule on this right now. We're kind of just recording these when we can. It's busy. Work's busy.
Market's a little wild. Yep.
So that's what we're doing. But
we're doing. Yeah.
Let's go.
Lots been going on. So what do you want to crack first today?
Well, first of all, what are you drinking?
Yeah, what are you drinking? I'm sorry. It's a little Southern Swell.
I'm being super discreet today. Oh, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Little Southern Swells, same year sellout, West Coast IPA, ABV, 6.9, giggity.
There you go. So we went to, a couple of us went to a big storm earlier in the week. And they're pushing not the seltzers, but they're going the vodka sodas. Have you seen these?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, was it Highball or whatever? No, not Highball. What the hell's the name of it? High Noon?
Yeah, like a High Noon.
Which, so Big Storm sells
not that much different.
Whiskey, rum, gin. They're selling all sorts of stuff now. But anyway, mm-hmm. I picked up some of the lemon lime vodka soda, which inside of this looks, you know, very discreet. So
yep, attaboy. Nice.
Cheers to that one, Sean.
Cheers to that. Cheers to that.
Got my camouflage alcohol going right now. But no, I want to start.
All right.
Looks like this chips bill's here.
Oh yeah, man.
Getting chips in the States, not potato chips.
The chips bill's been on the table for what, 2 years now?
I think it's been on forever. They've been talking about this for a long time.
But it's finally passed, and that's awesome. That's great. I don't generally like the government subsidizing industry, but if you are involved in a global marketplace where certain parties are being subsidized by respective governments, it does create an unlevel playing field. So it almost requires something like this in order to keep us competitive.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's definitely very good news for the market.
They're doing the blitz that is China's probably going to at some point do something with Taiwan. You have a lot of this manufacturing globally. So they're basically just doing an all-out blitz, like, okay, everybody build a manufacturing plant for the 22nd century.
Yeah.
You know, let's get ahead of the metaverse. Maybe they're pro Web3 like you, Sean.
Yep.
You know,
they are.
By the way, your Florida State shirt is kind of like a Web3 Miami vibes crypto guy.
I feel like
Florida
it.
State shirt. So
I feel that. I feel that. I've got a little peer in the background.
Yep.
Love it.
Yeah. I feel like you earned Ethereum wearing that shirt.
I earned a few Satoshis during this. Let me see here. So what do we got? What's NVIDIA? What have all the other chip makers done since this bill? Because what was it, about a month or so ago when it really?
No, about really moved. I mean, over a month, yes, but the market's up, and we'll talk about that in a second. But
that's true.
More than a lot of these manufacturers. So NVIDIA, you know, we had all the Nancy Pelosi news.
Yep.
And now
that
trend is back down. It's kind of tracking the market.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's.
What about AMD?
AMD, same thing.
Yeah, and Intel.
So let's see. I'm just going to do 3 months.
Intel's actually down.
AMD's up 11. NVIDIA's up barely 8. S&P's right around mid 8. So they're all kind of trading in the same scenario. Microchip technologies around 11. So they're honestly just tracking the market.
Okay.
I think it's probably, you know, yes, they're getting subsidized to build these, but they're also.
It takes so long.
How long are you going to take to build this? The Gigafactory is taking forever to build.
Yeah, so. You're right. That's definitely it. So they're just rebounding with the market. So, I mean, but those are good tailwinds for that space. That'll definitely be a, one of those structural positive aspects to it. If, say, the market does turn in a year, or longer from now.
Well, I guess we might take that back a little bit. So instead of looking at just the S&P, if you do a 3 month chart, S&P versus S&P semiconductors.
Yep.
It's double the market.
That sounds more like it. I was just letting it go with the numbers. I didn't check.
This is a little. I'm going to call bullshit on this.
Okay.
Just Holdings, First Solar,
Sun Power Corporation. So all of the shenanigans. All right. Shenanigans.
Yeah.
All right. Either way, point is that it's good for the industry. It's good for that segment. And it's going to give them, who was it the other day? Was it Intel that they, or not Intel? Company's name. And they're building a $40 billion plant now solely because of the passage, because they're going to be getting matching funding or supporting funding from the bill. I mean, it is very good. It's from a strategic perspective. Right now, I was reading the other day, I want to say it's 70 or 80% of the world's chips are manufactured or high-end chips, not just chips, right? So like the highest end, the best stuff comes out of Taiwan.
Yeah.
Right. So everybody in the world is at the mercy of the CCP if and when that eventuality comes through. And if that, you know, that level of concentration doesn't change, then everybody's going to be basically behind China with everything, you know, technologically speaking. So it's definitely good for the global marketplace. It's good for tech. It's good because at the same time, these chips go into so many other things, right? Automotive machines. I mean, crypto, right? I mean, it touches so many different aspects of the economy that they absolutely need to resolve this, because that's part of what's caused a lot of the issues with other high-end technology. I mean, specifically iPhones, right? I mean, that's been a big one for the last 2 years.
Yep. Yeah, I think this is the first step of deglobalization from the U.S. perspective. It's
you're going to
build them in country. You know, if somebody else wants to, you know, if it's an international
onshoring,
it's like, well, Global Foundries, which is a big semiconductor provider, I'm pretty sure they're based out of the Middle East. So you have these providers that, okay, yes, we're going to still work and we're going to buy your chips, but you're going to build them here.
Yep.
So it's a good option for, I think, overall long-term just jobs in the U.S. It might be promising, but I don't know if it's going to do anything from a cost perspective or hit the bottom line of any of these companies.
Not anytime soon, for sure. No, and here it is. It's Micron. So Micron came out the other day and said that they were going to now be investing $40 billion into U.S. memory chip plants, basically divesting from the Taiwan market.
Yep.
But yeah, no, onshoring is definitely becoming bigger and bigger, more and more. It seems like more and more of a necessity. And not even just that, like getting out of China. A lot of companies are breaking their necks, getting out of there as fast as they can. Bangladesh is becoming the huge winner. Vietnam is becoming a huge winner from it. India, a lot of the surrounding Singapore, a lot of the surrounding areas are becoming big beneficiaries of companies leaving China. And a lot of it has to do also, they're having labor issues.
Yep.
Right. So that's driving the cost of labor up huge there. So they're just spilling over to the neighbors.
Like Sri Lanka. Yeah. it's like the world is just imploding over there with inflation. So
yeah. It's pretty wild. Yeah. Moving
Let's
on.
Go market next.
Market.
I want to get your thoughts on this, but I mean, CNBC, Bloomberg for probably 3 weeks now has been pounding the table on 4,200 as a really key resistance line for the S&P. If it didn't get through that, it may retest the lows, and it's kind of blown right through it. Sean, not you, Sean, but the other Sean that works in our office, actually he's the first one I heard that said, look at the 150-day moving average.
Mm-hmm,
looking at 200-day average prices, which it's pretty much exactly where this 4,200 number comes in. So we popped above it. You know, we talked about a few minutes ago, everything's kind of rallied off the bottom pretty hard, which was back in the June timeframe. But what are your thoughts on this? Do you think we've V-bottomed, or is this a temporary euphoric release before we go back down to the bottom?
That's a good question. I think it really comes down to how sticky this inflation is. Right? I mean, if we get to a situation where we start to see, okay, next month it's 8.1 or 7.9, right? We start making bigger chunks. Like, I mean, the reality is the difference between the previous inflation report and this report was a pretty nice jump in the right direction. And if those jumps start to kind of compound and we get two or three of those in a row, I could absolutely see this being a more sustainable rally. But if we get into a situation where, hey, it kind of slugs down into the low eights, high sevens, and then it kind of sits there for a bit, right? And then we get to like a situation where we're sticky mid sevens, high sevens inflation. I mean, it's going to continue to just drain the discretionary spending budgets of every consumer out there. And last time I checked, I believe 70% of the economy is driven by the consumer. So if the consumer's spending a lot less because they've now burnt through, because like we've talked about in the last several episodes, there's kind of a buffer that a lot of people have because they have done a good job of savings recently in the last several years. The average American consumer's got a lot more cash savings and a lot better credit card debt situation.
Yep.
Right. But if these high prices continue on, they're making some types of lifestyle changes, but they're going to still spend, and that's going to eat away that savings. It's going to increase those credit card balances. And then eventually that's going to get to a point where that's going to break. And so really, I think it depends on how sticky this inflation is.
I think you're spot on I was looking through.
That was perfect.
Yeah, the end. Wrap up. Good stuff. Cheers.
All right, boys. That was a good one. See you next week.
No, I think the big question here is going to be, do these crazy high inflation numbers stick around? I think you nailed it. If this settles out in the sevens, it stays in the sevens.
Yeah.
But we kind of went absurd in June.
Like, yeah.
You had a 42-year high in June with most, like, the energy component of inflation. Mm-hmm. And then if you look just...
Winter is coming, though. Don't forget that.
True. Winter is coming. But, I mean, to add a counter argument to that, there's a lot of new drilling is getting greenlit. I know we're...
What's
not...
that? How long's that getting? Yeah, how long? What's the lag time on that? 3 years?
Well, this is, we're going green, Sean. You know, All right. Just everyone's going to put a solar panel on.
We just better hope that global warming kicks into overdrive a little extra this winter and people aren't freezing their tits off. Because
it's
otherwise...
Right now.
I know. It's pretty warm right now, but it's a... It's mid-August, so, but I will say if it's a strong winter, I mean, they're in trouble.
So, but look at these numbers. The energy component of the inflation rate was, again, up 41% over 40-year high, which is crazy. But the reduction to the past quarter, gasoline costs went from 60% down to 44. So you've had like it's changed dramatically there.
Yeah.
Fuel's the same thing. But what hasn't changed is there's still like food inflation in the system.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But I don't know how long it's going to take the bottlenecks of.
I don't know if it's just the bottlenecks. I mean, it's also the lack of grain that's going to be on the market and the expectation of forward or a future, shorter, inventories or smaller inventories because of the. Because of what's going on in Ukraine and Russia. I mean, there's that's going to have an impact and a sustained impact on food prices. And that's kind of to the point of, or the concern of stickiness, right? Because as long as this continues to go on, I mean, that's going to continue to have a really concerning, unmanageable risk out there. I mean, you have no clue how hot this war is and like how much worse it's going to get, how much longer it's going to last. I mean, how much broader the impact could be, and all of that is going to impact food prices.
If I was going to add kind of a tell of when I started to see some, I guess, easing, if you would, in some of my concerns, when Target, Walmart, and Amazon all came out and said they were overstaffed and they had too much inventory relative to the demand, like that was the first sign that was kind of back when the market was bottoming. That was almost the catalyst that started the recovery was the largest companies have too much stuff and there's not enough people buying it, which means the demand had cooled dramatically. But again, to your point, you don't know what the lingering effects are. You know, there was a good Wells Fargo had data on credit card balances are just getting racked up again. People are using reward points to cover transactions, not new spending or kind of gifting things.
Yep.
So that's, in my mind, I guess what's going to potentially cause the market to do something, but I guess to counter myself again, market's forward looking. The market could have priced all that in June. So you like the counter and the double counter?
Did you ever see that movie, The Princess Bride? But on the other hand, and it's the bald guy too. This is that was so perfect. But then on the other hand, and then on the other hand, he's like debating. Back and forth with himself. It's fucking great. That was so perfect.
If you're ever sick, I can run the podcast.
That was incredible. That was truly incredible, sir.
I'll play both roles.
But on the other hand.
Yeah, we're both on the same thinking here, if you would.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it's got some euphoria that's kind of come back to the market. I mean, the Best Buy, or not the Best Buy, the Bed Bath & Beyond, the GameStop stuff. Kind of showed some fraud. Crypto starting to come back.
Yep.
So the market's kind of recovered. I just don't know if we're out of the woods yet. We got to see probably 2 or 3 quarters worth of economic data to know where we're at.
Yeah, man. And I'm still in the camp that it's going to be a cold winter. Oil's going to spike. And then in Q1, we're going to have the grain deliveries aren't going to be there. The fertilizer costs are going to continue to be higher, so those deliveries aren't going to be there either. And I think somewhere possibly in Q4 to Q1 of next year, we're going to see more volatility again, similar to what we saw at the end of last year. But we'll see.
All right, Sean, let's get your ether out.
ETH, break the ETH. Yeah, man, the merge is going on. So what's happening is
merge, for those that don't know what the merge is.
Yeah. So essentially they are switching programming languages and formats or protocols to transition to a different type of language. Again, proof of work is what Ethereum is always operated on, and also that's the same that Bitcoin operates on. It's a little bit more energy intensive, and so that's why a lot of environmentalists, a lot of green people also are very against it. But it's also a little slower. They have not gotten to there are different things that are looking to speed it up and change that. But the reason why Ethereum was invented and why proof of stake, which is the new thing it's moving towards after the merge, was created is because those transaction volumes are theoretically higher and those transaction times are theoretically faster. And so the objective is to basically make Ethereum in programs that are built on the Ethereum blockchain faster, more scalable, and make it more commercially viable. And so that's what this is all about. Because at the moment, Bitcoin, unless you're looking at Lightning Network stuff, which is still in its infancy, it's growing, and there's a lot of really interesting stuff happening there. But at the moment, it's still young, and this is going to be kind of that first thing, if you will. It's a little so some of the negatives that people say are that it's slightly less secure, which is somewhat true, but it's still very secure. But again, at the end of the day, it's about scaling and speed and making it a more viable commercial platform, essentially.
You know what I saw on Twitter that was interesting? You started to see a little bit of convergence, if you would, between the market cap of Bitcoin and Ethereum. They're almost starting. I mean, they're still
that's
not
referred
close.
To as the flippening.
The flippening, is that what it's called?
So it's called the flippening, and so that's when that and this is just like a theory that eventually, because of this change, that it now makes Ethereum so much more commercially viable that it will continue to have more and more protocols and systems built on top of it, different languages and different coins and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it'll just become more valuable. And then that network's going to grow larger and eventually we'll have a larger market cap than Bitcoin. At the moment, it has not happened. It's all still theory. But the event that, let's say that day happens, the day it would happen would be referred to as the flipping.
Yeah.
And their market cap's flipping.
I'm glad Santoshi is still unknown. Satoshi, whatever the hell his name is.
Come on.
We don't technically know if that's him or not. But anyways, I'm glad he's unknown because every time I see Vitalik and he's got his socks tucked into his jeans, tucked into his socks, I just scratch my head. I'm like, is this where the world's gone?
But here you go. Here you go.
What do you got?
Oh, no. That was just a quick fact that Ethereum processed 4.5 times more transactions than Visa did in 2021.
So question for it.
Yes,
with
sir.
All this going on, how's El Salvador doing? I haven't heard much about them.
We're hanging in there. It's winter, chilly. The seasons are opposite. It's reverse. It's hot in Florida. It's a little chilly down in El Salvador during wintertime. But, I think he's got the long-term vision right. And again, at the end of the day, it's going to come where it's just a prisoner's dilemma. And it's a gold rush because all of these small countries are going to eventually start to adopt it. More are going to start to adopt it. A little bit more are going to start to adopt it. And then whoever's last or whoever's some of the first ones, right, the leaders within that adoption cycle are going to benefit. Who knows if he'll be there to see those benefits? They may kick him out beforehand because they quit.
Mm-hmm.
But then the person who takes over will probably not change course too much, I would imagine.
I got something from Bloomberg for you on this.
What you got?
Government of El Salvador is negotiating a $1.3 billion extended fund facility with the International Monetary Fund, yet the International Monetary Fund has urged the nation to strip its Bitcoin of legal standing before they do that. So I don't know if that's a good thing, but
It's not.
Someone needed to try it, so I'm glad Elso Fedor did it.
Well, no. I mean, I think it's eventually going to happen. It's just whoever's first through the door usually gets shot.
Yeah.
So it seems like he's taking a couple bullets right now, and I don't know if he will make it out, but I think El Salvador will, and I think they're going to be a better, more financially stable country because of it. I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's going to continue. There was a number I was reading the other day, and you can look this one up for me, but it was there was a massive growth in tourism and foreign investment. And so all these other things that are not directly tied to, right, their investment in Bitcoin, but them basically signaling to the world that, hey, we are a Bitcoin haven. We are a place where you can come plant your flag. We will give you favorable tax treatment. We're going to support you, blah, 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 blah. Bitcoin Beach, the whole thing. I mean, it's a real thing. And there's a lot of people that are moving there, a lot of investment, a lot of building going on because they are deciding to be that Bitcoin hub for Central America or South America.
I mean, you might as well try it if you're young. You got nothing to do. El Salvador's like,
It's not like it can get much worse.
It's pretty low down there.
I'm just saying, these countries that are trying some of this stuff, it's like they're not in great financial shape. Like, they've got terrible debt. They've got all these loans to the IMF. I mean, it's just like, it's like something out of Game of Thrones. The IMF is like the Iron Bank. They own the Iron Bank of Bravos, all this money. I mean, why not take that kind of to chance? You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, let's go to where people are trying stuff that's not really making sense. Stonks are back.
Stonks. Stonks, baby.
I thought we were never going to talk about this, and this is going to be the end of an era for a generation.
I don't think it ever is going to leave now, man.
I don't know. Well, I guess to bring everyone up to speed, GameStop, Bed Bath & Beyond, AMC have been ripping the last couple of months. Funny enough, GameStop to me is the funniest thing.
It is.
Followed some of the news on their NFT platform.
No, yeah. Oh, yeah, I've seen some of it. But what specifically are you referring to?
So they had, like, the first NFT that went up was, like, a digital version of the guy jumping off the World Trade Center.
Okay.
So I got so much backlash because they're like, why are you posting this? The second thing that went up was someone took, like, illegally acquired art and, like, posted it up there. So it's like, okay, it's... This thing just launched out of nowhere.
Damn it, GameStop.
Yeah, GameStop's been doing it. But what are your thoughts here? You've seen Robinhood announced in Coinbase last couple of weeks. Earnings have been just terrible. Both companies are down 80-something percent. They're laying off people left and right. They're the powerhouses behind a lot of these kind of shit coins on one side, but also a lot of these shit companies that are getting, I mean.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't mind a movie, and I don't see the point of going to GameStop anymore. Maybe Bed Bath & Beyond if you need a towel rack, but
yeah,
I look at this and say, okay, are people coming back into this? Is this a hedge fund-driven thing? I don't know.
I think we're in a very protracted tug-of-war between the big money guys and the apes, and every time that they're basically like, so obviously the big money guys, all the hedge funds, they went in there and, you know, everybody knows the whole story, right? They went and shorted them and they overshorted them. And these guys figured out kind of a kink in the armor. And they're like, you know, hey, we can all hit this point and exploit this short and flip it, blah, 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 blah. They made a ton of money. But eventually, like, that's got to stop, right? That steam runs out. It's always like the greater fool theory, right? Who's the last man holding the bag? And so that starts to happen. And then what you have is the big money guys are like, all right, now it's starting to happen. We're going to pile on top of it. We're going to try to push them down. And then it starts to work to a point until it gets to like an oversold level. And then like the apes come back in and they boost it back. And it's just like this back and forth they've been doing. It's nuts, man. It's a wild thing to watch. None of it is company related.
Yep. So it's over 3 months. 3 months, the S&P's up 8%.
Mm-hmm.
Clover Health, if you remember that dump.
Yeah.
Up 53%.
Of course.
We got Rivian.
Up, oh, God. 100%. Have they really been? Oh, Lord.
We go to GameStop next. It was 3 months. Up 101%.
Oh, man.
And then we go back to AMC because they're doing this ape preferred stock, which I wonder how many class action lawsuits we're going to see in like 10 years, but up 145%.
Dude, it's like a freaking like video game casino now. I love it. I love some parts of it, though. I'm not going to lie. I do love some parts of it. I think it's fun to watch.
I think the crowds for these are the most creative people when it comes to making like memes and GIFs. Like some of them.
Oh, they're absolutely funny. They're incredible. They are the, like, when you're like, you're just like, man, I love the internet. It's so goddamn funny. Like, these people are fucking hilarious. Like, those guys make the absolute best memes. Because it's just, it's crowdsourcing, right? It's the masses. You have so many random people. What is that? What is that? Wall Street Bets has like 12, 13 million people in there. It's massive. I mean,
even with a couple $1,000s each, you know, arm the rebels.
That's what they are, man. These savages are a bunch of little rebels that are like hiding out. I want to know what percentage of that number is now professionals. Right? That are not really part of the movement, right? That are not really part of that group that are just in there to watch. Like, I mean, with all honesty, I would technically be considered one as well because I'm just there to watch.
Yeah.
So I wonder how many people are there are like observers. Obviously, some are observers because they're going to take action and some are just observing for entertainment. I'm in the latter category, but I wonder how much of that 12 to 13 million
are observers. I got so many good memes off that site. That's
correct.
Great content. But what, I think what you've seen a lot, there's been a lot of people that used to write for something like Seeking Alpha, or they even have a Substack and they're trying to get people to follow. They're like, I'm just going to do a write-up on why you should buy GameStop, and I'm going to post it on Wall Street Bets. Maybe I'll get some attention. So it's been really, really interesting to watch. But again, I'm walking away from it. I'm not touching it.
I see those
dumpster fires.
Yeah, man, there's just way too much. I'm not still sold on the general like strength of the broader market. I'm definitely not sold on like the stability of the momentum that these guys have, right? Because at the end of the day, it's like if it starts ripping, like you can obviously jump in and out quickly, and it's obviously a risk. But if there's some reason to have confidence in that, there's not a lot of reason right now. There's just been some technical indicators. Basically, things have gotten beat up really bad. And we've gotten a slightly worse or slightly better than expected inflation number, like one better than inflation. Yeah, that's it. One report, and now the market's ripping. So we also had that. That was the other thing, right? Before the report even came out, you had a lot of big influential players in the market, like Elon Musk, basically like, you know, we think it's peaked. A lot of big, you know, prognosticators, we think it's peaked. And then the report comes out, right, reinforces all of what these people are saying. So I think that kind of, you know, add a little additional momentum to it. But again, it's hard to get back into stuff like this with one good report.
Yeah, yeah. Last thing I was going to end on, and then we'll wrap it up here. But from all the GameStop chaos, Roaring Kitty has 500,000 subscribers on YouTube. His last video, most recent video I see on there is 5 reasons GameStop is not a roach, and it's him smoking the roach end of a cigar. So good for that guy.
I love it, man. Thank God. God bless those people. You know, keep your powder dry. You know, don't get too in love with this particular swing in the market. And keep your head on a swivel. Good luck, everybody.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Adios, everybody.
Adios.
Jack and Sean work for Senge Advisory Group, a registered investment advisory firm. All discussions between Jack and Sean or any podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Senge Advisory Group. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for investment decisions. Clients of Senge Advisory Group may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.